To talk to someone who used to be a 49er and longtime quarterback throughout the league. Pleased to have him here on the River Islands guest line on Willard and Dibbs. Thank you so much, Brian Hoyer, for joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're fantastic. I would love for you to share with our audience, because I've saw some of your recent comments on just in terms of the way football is usually called. What are the difficulties as a quarterback in playing for Kyle Shanahan?
Well, I think for me, I played for Kyle twice, once in Cleveland and then another time in San Francisco. And just calling the plays the second time around was much easier because it was so different from what I had been accustomed to. And so I remember in Cleveland, you know, that first year trying to, one, I was coming back off of a torn ACL, but just trying to get the terminology, you know, under my belt, so to speak. And I remember, you know, when I came to play for Kyle out in San Francisco, you know, the second time around was much easier, but it can be wordy. And then I think, you know, a lot of people have touched on it. I think a lot of people see the clip of John Gruden getting after Chris Sims all those years ago and think, oh man, you know, that's a tough play call. And I similar system, obviously it's evolved over the years, but you know, any offense you play in, there's going to be, you got to be able to tell people what to do. And you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak. And you could do it in multiple different ways. And, you know, but it was something with repetition and time. You get to understand it. And I always give Kyle a hard time because I always ask him if I could wear a wristband with the plays. And he's like, man, I have a hard time calling it that way because sometimes I'm not looking down at my call sheet to call the play. I call it from my head. And then, you know, the trade happens with Jimmy Garoppolo. And a few weeks later, I'm sitting there watching and Jimmy's got a wristband on. And I text Kyle, I'm like, what the hell? I could have used that, you know? But, you know, in that situation, Jimmy had only been there for a few weeks, so I understand it, and you know, sometimes you have to adapt.
It's a fantastic vignette right there because Jimmy G always had the play sheet on the wrist. You mentioned wordiness of the play call, and you also have spoken about the rigidity of what Kyle wants. Is that really where Brock Purdy excels? Is he takes the play call and he knows exactly where Kyle wants him to throw it, or the secondary option, or the tertiary?
Well, I think Kyle's had Brock from his infancy stage in the NFL. And clearly, I mean, look, they drafted Brock with Jimmy on the roster, with Trey Lance, who they traded up. And so clearly Kyle saw something in that pre-draft process that he really liked about Brock Purdy in order to draft him with that last pick. And I think, you know, I saw some people in my comments on my Twitter, or I guess it's called X now, they were trying to say that I was bashing Brock by what I said on Peter Schrager's podcast. And if anything, I was complimenting him because I don't think there's ever been a quarterback who's fit better with Kyle Shanahan than Brock Purdy. And I think that comes from him being there day one with Kyle and Kyle, you know, just sitting down with him and saying, hey, on this play, on CO Bo, this is the read. And no matter what it is, this is what it's going to be. No matter what the coverage is, this is how I want you to read it. And so he's had him, you know, from the very first moment he stepped into rookie training camp and training him that way. And Brock just understands it better than any other person who's ever played for Kyle. And that's pretty clear. And I think, you know, they're just so symbiotic. And that's why I try to say, you know, when I say he's Kyle's avatar out there, Kyle is one of the premier offensive minds to ever coach football. And he sees it in a very unique way. Totally. I was privileged enough to play for Kyle. I learned so much from him, but very different from a Josh McDaniels, who I learned a ton from him, and a Bill O'Brien or a North Turner. And I think it takes a very special quarterback to understand that and see it through his eyes. And I think that's what you've seen with Brock Purdy. That's exactly how Kyle wants the game to be played. And yes, things happen and he's off schedule and he makes some great plays. But when I watch Brock and I watch those games, I'm like, man, I wish I could have played like that in that system, because he does it exactly how Kyle's asking him to do, and he has full trust that Kyle's going to get the right play called at the right time.
Brian Hoyer is with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. This is fascinating stuff, and Brian, I wonder what you can share about this, because I know you weren't there, but Purdy was known as kind of a gunslinger mentality in college, and now he gets to the 49ers, and you're saying he's been molded perfectly. So your best guess on how Kyle Shanahan was able to sort of get Brock to change his own mold to now become this?
Well, I think you still see it. You see, I mean, look, the NFL is not a perfect world, and no matter how you draw up a perfect play, there's times where it breaks down, and you see that with Brock and using his athleticism, escaping out of the pocket, making throws. And so I think, you know, as it's kind of a compliment really to Brock and the person that he is to come in and say, listen, I'm going to just soak it all in. I'm going to learn as much as I can. And if the play, you know, happens in the timing of the play and I go through my reads and I remember, you know, I'd never basically been in a system where you tied the reads to your drops. And I remember doing these drills with Kyle and he's like, all right, on your first hitch, I want you to throw the curl. On your second hitch, I want you to get down to the back. And when I watch Brock play and the offensive line has given him time, he's a very much of a rhythm passer and playing in that rhythm. But also, you've mentioned his gunslinger mentality. If things don't go correctly, it's not like he's a statue in there and is going to just sit there and take a sack. Like, he moves around, he can run the ball, he scrambles, makes some good throws. So, like I said, I mean, clearly the guy, you know, is made of a great makeup because he was the last pick in the draft and, you know, last year he's in the Super Bowl. So, you know, just one of those great stories, and clearly he's determined to get better and better each year, and he's got a great coach leading him the way.
How important is his pre-snap work to the Kyle Shanahan offense? Because you talk about how complicated the play calls are, and then when you get to the line of scrimmage, everything kind of shuts down. How important is it that he's able to kind of decipher what the coverage is going to be before the snap?
Well, I think, you know, I just mentioned two different, you know, great offense coordinators, Kyle Shanahan, Josh McDaniels. And I would say, you know, Josh was very much about pre-post-snap reads and more so post-snap reads. And I would say Kyle was more, here's the play call, here's the pre-snap read, and this is not going to change post-snap. You're going to go left to right on this play or whatever it might be. And so two very different ways to look at it. And I think, you know, I remember Kyle always saying, like, the quarterback has so much to do. I want to take something off of this plate. And so, you know, in that system, it's basically these long play calls. But once the play's called, it's kind of get up there, let the line make the calls, snap the ball, and run the play. Whereas, you know, when I played for a guy like Josh McDaniels, it's calling multiple plays in the huddle. You got to give a pre-snap look, a post-snap look, and things are changing a lot. So, you know, like I said, ton of different ways to do it. And the reality is no one's really reinventing the wheel. The plays are the plays, and then you kind of put your own spin on them. And I even look at, you know, when I watched that game the other night, Kyle's offense has evolved so much from where it was when I played with him in Cleveland to where it was when I played with him in San Francisco to where it is now. And he's really good at adapting to the playmakers that he has. So you have a guy like Debo, Christian McCaffrey's out. You throw him in the backfield and hand him the ball off. And, you know, do you have the Swiss Army knife, one of my favorite teammates of all time that I played with in the San Francisco, and Kyle Juszczyk, and he came up with a big pass the other night. And he allows them to do so many different things, and Kyle knows how to use them to his advantage.
Brian Hoyer is with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Brian, give it to us dummies in a way that we can understand, because you said already that Kyle Shanahan sees football differently than anybody else. How would you expand on that to someone who may not understand football at the level that you do?
Well, I think from my understanding and my experiences, I've never seen a guy who is a play caller that's watching things on the defense and making minute by minute, second by second adjustments. And I know a lot's been made about, you know, the West Coast run game and the wide zones and the boots and things like that. And, you know, I remember asking him, you know, how are you determining when to do that? And he goes, well, I'm watching the end. I'm watching these things in real time. And then that's kind of leading me to go to whatever the next play I want to go with is. If I see the linebackers are getting up in the line of scrimmage, I'm going to go to a play action pass and things like that. As opposed to, you know, a lot of offensive coordinators have their call sheet and they kind of have, here's my second and five plays. Here's my third down plays. Here's my play action passes. I think Kyle is so good at coming up with that game plan that when it comes to game day, a lot of times you see him calling those plays. He's not even looking down at a call sheet. He has those calls figured out. And I always joke, he would be in pregame, he'd lock himself in some kind of water closet and he'd go over the entire game plan, and you'd have to go find him in the back of, you know, some little spot in the back of the locker room, and he'd be going over the game plan. And sure enough, you know, he knew it so well that he could call a lot of those plays without ever looking down at a sheet.
It's incredible to watch as a novice. You know, Mark and I are radio hosts. We never played in the NFL, but I watch what he does with Kyle, not Kyle Shanahan, but Kyle Juszczyk. Can you expand just on how he uses the fullback and why that's such an edge for Kyle Shanahan and the way he calls offense?
Well, that position is kind of a dying breed, other than Kyle Juszczyk, as you mentioned, and then a guy that I've played with in a few different places, Jakob Johnson. I mean, there's not very many of those guys left. And the one thing that makes it so unique with Kyle Juszczyk is he's probably the most athletic fullback that's probably ever played the game, and he can do things that most fullbacks can't, and Kyle understands that, but defenses also have to respect when he's out there that he could also be a lead blocker, and then the next thing you could do is you can send him down the sideline on wheel route like they did against the Jets the other night. So Kyle, I think, has a great understanding of how to use guys with unique skill sets. I mean, obviously we've seen it with Debo, you know, over the progression of his career in the backfield, out at wide receiver, on reverses, on all these things. And Kyle, you know, you can see the evolution of what his offensive scheme has been. Like I mentioned, from, you know, going back even to when he was in Washington with RG3 and running some of those quarterback runs. And so he's very good at adapting to what his players do really well.
So, Brian, I'm sure you've answered this before. At the risk of it being played out, I do want to hear your answer. When someone says to you, Brock Purdy, system quarterback, what's your response?
Well, I'm going to say something that's probably even more controversial. I think every quarterback's a system quarterback. It depends on what system you're in. You know, I played a long time with Tom Brady, and he, that system developed around him. And to be honest with you, no other quarterback's ever been able to run that system as well as he did. And guys like Matt Stafford have been in different systems. So when people say system quarterback, I go, well, what does that even mean? So to say Brock Purdy's a system quarterback, I say he's a successful quarterback because he's running the system that the coach is asking him to run. Now, are certain guys maybe not fit? Because of their, you know, is a guy like Jalen Hurts or Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, you know, maybe they have different abilities, and it goes to like what Kyle does with his skill players. I think good offensive coordinators see what does my quarterback do well, and I'm going to kind of fit it around that. So, you know, when I kind of laugh at that when people say system quarterback, because first of all, the people who usually say that don't even know what the systems are. And so for people to say that's good, bad, and different, I really don't think they understand what they're talking about to begin with.
Yeah, they disparage quarterbacks with the system label, but you're right. Any good quarterback is a system quarterback. But Mark and I always debate about like what Kyle's favorite system would be. It feels like it's a 50-50 split with Brock Purdy. Would he be happier passing it more or running it more? What was your experience playing for him in terms of the run-pass mix?
I mean, Kyle loves the run game. He's obsessed with the run game. I used to sit in those run game meetings for 45, 50 minutes and have him as the head coach go over every single running play. And I remember thinking like, man, in this offense, I don't even really have to do anything in the run game. Now, in other offenses, I got to make the mic point. I got to make an alert. I got to change, you know, tell everybody what the front is. But in the 49ers offense, there was very little to do other than maybe switching from one play to another. But he had the entire offense sit in there and listen to those run game meetings because I think he knew how important that was to his entire offense. And you see that. And I remember him telling me he learned a lot, you know, when he was in Atlanta, because they'd be playing the Carolina Panthers, and the Carolina Panthers run defense was tough. And he said he used to abandon the run game a little too early, but then he realized, you know, in that scenario, you got to keep pushing it, because even if you're only getting 2-3 yard runs, sometimes those 2-3 yard runs lead to 80 yard play action pass touchdowns. And so he said, you know, I'll give that up to get some of those explosive plays in the pass game.
So Brian, your perspective on, can this particular group, can they consistently win without Christian McCaffrey if he misses more time?
Well, I mean, they showed it the other night, and the Jets' defense is no joke. I was talking about that on my SiriusXM radio show this morning with Solomon Wilcox. I mean, you expected the Jets' defense to come in and be a top-five defense, and they kind of tore those guys apart. And it's not, you know, unusual for a Shanahan-type system, you know, to kind of plug and play a running back, a guy that, you know, I didn't really know about before Monday night, and he rushes for, what was it, over 140 yards, Jordan Mason. So, you know, that is kind of a testament to Kyle and who he is and what he's able to do. Obviously, Christian, you know, Offensive Player of the Year is, I mean, that probably was one of the most, you know, impressive trades of all time, because I think Kyle had a vision for what Christian McCaffrey could do in his offense. And obviously there's a connection there with Christian's dad, Ed, playing for Kyle's dad in Denver. So a little bit of a familiarity, but obviously we've seen what Christian McCaffrey is capable of in that offense. And so hopefully he gets back sooner than later.
Just real quick, looking at Minnesota then, a team that really snuffed out the run last year in the meeting between these two teams. What does Kyle do to try to counteract a Minnesota front that sometimes has 9 people on the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, they're an aggressive defense. They have a lot of good players. I actually spoke with Harris Harrison Smith, or no, Harrison Phillips this morning of the Vikings. He was on our show, and he just signed a new contract, and he's kind of that main guy in the front disrupting the run. And Brian Flores, who's the defensive coordinator, a guy that I know well from our time in New England together, is a very aggressive guy. And so this will be a battle for sure. I mean, the Vikings kind of laid the smackdown on the Giants last week defensively for sure. So it's look, I mean, in the NFL, it's always a test. And I think the 49ers have an offense that's kind of clicking on all cylinders, which is always hard to do early in the season because everybody's kind of figuring each other out. But they have a lot of continuity, and I think it'll be a good matchup for them this weekend.
Brian Hoyer with us on 95.7 The Game, if that's your real name. Hey, is your name actually Axel?
Yeah, it is. I got outed by my buddy Matt Slater a few years ago. My legal first name is Axel, and no, it's not because of Axel Rose or Axel Foley. My dad's actually from Germany, and his name is Axel. So everyone wants to think it's like Axel Rose, and I'm a big Guns N' Roses guy, which right. I enjoy the music, but that is not why I'm called that.
Well, but and so how did it end up that you went by Brian?
Right.
Well, I was firstborn, and so I think my dad wanted me to be a junior. My mom said, well, he's my firstborn, too, and I want to name him Brian. So they compromised. My name, you know, legally is Axel, but my middle name is Brian. So,
mom won out. What a shock.
Yeah, and it's still time to switch back. I mean, Axel's a pretty badass name now. I mean, now that you're...
It was as an adult, but I mean, you know, no one ever called me by it, and I actually thought about switching it at some point, and my dad was like, don't even, I mean, the ridicule that you might open yourself up to, because it is kind of a unique name, and I like it. I mean, it was reserved for people who knew me really well, and then a few years ago when I was making a start for the Patriots, Matt Slater, all-time great out here in New England, kind of outed it to the media, and then my secret was out.
All right, then we'll let you leave us with this. Who's a bigger badass, Axl Rose or Axel Foley?
Oh, I love Axel Foy. I love those Beverly Hills movies, so I'm going to go with him.
Yep, there it is. We got producers in the other room looking at us like, who's Axel Foley?
It's exactly.
So terrible. Yeah, I know.
And who's Axel Rose, these whippersnappers? I got no idea. I mean, if you ever want to go into, like, professional wrestling, Axel Hoyer, you could wreck some people now.
It's pretty good.
Yeah,
I think
awesome.
I think there's a new show with it on Netflix, I think. I thought I saw that when I was scrolling the other day.
I almost just called you Axel. Hey, Brian.
I only want to call him Axel.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. That was a blast.
No problem. Anytime.